Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for aging and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Welcome everyone. It's great to have you here with us today. I'm Coral Wilkinson, your host, and I'm joined today by someone I follow within the sector, someone whose commentary on aged care I respect. Adrian Morgan is our guest speaker today. Welcome, Adrian.
Hello. How are you, Coral? And thanks for the invitation.
It's a pleasure to have you here with me. Adrian is the General Manager of FlexiCare, an independent, not-for-profit organisation which supports older people in Brisbane's southern suburbs to live well in their own homes and community. He is also currently chairperson of the Queensland Home Care Committee for Ageing Australia, which is the Aged Care Provider Association's new name. He was previously a member of the National Aged Care Alliance. It's great to have you on the show, Adrian. Your experience and your ability to explain aged care in simple and relatable terms will provide clarity for our listeners and answer some of the questions we're often asked about home care package providers. Being responsive and flexible with the delivery of services and support for older people living at home is one of the key considerations I advise people when they ask us how to choose a good provider for their home care package. What does responsiveness and flexibility look like for people who are recipients of services within their home care packages with FlexiCare?
Well, Coral, I think the starting point is that we recognise that older people's needs can change very quickly and quite often and very significantly. And, for example, if there are people who are currently relying on a partner to help support them in their home and that partner becomes ill or goes into hospital or something else happens, the help that they're getting from that person suddenly disappears. And even if it's disappearing temporarily, the person suddenly has needs that they didn't have before that aren't being met. So I think quite fundamental in our DNA is the recognition that we need to be responsive to those changing needs and make people available to take a phone call from somebody who says, things have changed, I need some more help. And our systems are set up, our ways of working are set up so that we quickly can respond. And we have a group of home care partners, that's essentially what we call our, some people would call them care managers, but for us, they're home care partners. And their job is to work with people to make decisions about the best way of using the home care package to best meet the person's needs.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's fantastic. We're well aware of that. As you just said, you take one person out of that situation, a couple, and it's a very fragile situation that could result in perhaps the spouse or the other person there, unfortunately, having to be admitted to hospital as well if they can't get the support. So responsiveness is such a key factor in good service provision, I feel.
And we put that very high on the list of things that are important to us to be able to do that and to have enough people in our team who've got the skills to quickly step in and provide that support.
Excellent. So FlexiCare delivers services under the Commonwealth Home Support Program as well as home care packages. These are two different aged care programs with their own funding streams. Can you explain for our listeners how these two programs differ, Adrian?
Well, they are fundamentally different. And even though they both have essentially the same aim, which is to support people in their own homes and communities. So the Commonwealth Home Support Program is essentially designed to assist people who have relatively low-level needs. They might need some help around the home once a fortnight. They might need some help with some shopping, maybe even the occasional shower. But essentially, the people who this program was designed to help have a lower level of need than those in the other program, which is called Home Care Packages. So the Commonwealth Home Support Program, essentially the way that it operates is that you have to, as an individual, be assessed as eligible for it, and you'll be given, if you like, a code that says you're entitled to have some home help, some personal care, and some social support. And then with those codes, those permissions from the organisation that's assessed you, you then go looking for an organisation that has some funding from the government to match those things that you need. So, for example, you're looking for a person, an organisation in your area that has home help that they can provide or personal care. But that funding is held by the organisation. The tricky bit is that the amount of funding that the government gives doesn't match the demand in the local community. So it's a set amount, it's capped. So my organisation, for example, has had essentially the same amount of money from the government to meet the needs of our community where we're helping people with Commonwealth Home Support Program for many years. A small increment. But really, essentially the same. Yet the needs in our community have grown enormously. Mm-hmm. So this is, for a person who's listening, this may be an issue that they run into. They've got their codes. They know I'm approved for this. And they then start ringing people and saying, can you support me with some help? And the answer they may well get is, I'm sorry, we can't help you. And the reason will be not that people don't want to help, so they simply won't have the fund. And so this program, this Commonwealth Home Support Program, there's so much that's good about it, but one of the things that's not good, it's not properly funded.
Yeah, exactly. And we hear this all the time,
right across
Australia.
And that doesn't surprise me at all. We have regular phone calls from people ringing us saying, can you provide particular things, and the answer may be, unfortunately, at this stage, we don't have any available funding. And then they go on and say, I have rung every other organisation in this area and they're all giving the same answer. So this must be so frustrating for people who are caught in this situation. I have a member of my own board of directors who's a person who's eligible for services. He has been waiting for one particular type of service now for 3 years and cannot get it.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, we don't happen to provide that service. That's something we're not approved for and have no funding for. But that's his story, and he just shakes his head and says, I've just been trying for long. Look, the other program, that's all about Commonwealth Home Support Program we've been talking, and that's one of the two programs. Mm. The other one is Home Care Packages. And this is the one that we started talking about at the beginning of our discussion. And this is a very different way this is organised. This program is organised on the basis of, again, being assessed, first of all. And for this one, you're assessed at a particular level. So they might say you're entitled to level one funding, and that'll be a dollar amount, rather than particular services. Or maybe you're a person with much higher needs. You might be entitled to $50,000 a year, $60,000 a year, a much bigger number, because your needs are very significant. And that's an assessment that's made by a separate organisation. And then they effectively go through the government and give you a letter and say, you have entitlement to funding up to whatever that level is. That is one of those four levels. Then you go on a waiting list, because although you've been assessed as needing that, there is not actually, the government hasn't actually got funding to give you yet. So you're sitting on a waiting list and you're waiting for your name to come to the top of a national waiting list. And that typically takes, based on most recent information, about 11 months for most people. Some people it goes over 12 months. Some people it can be less, but that's the average across the country. And that's information from the Department of Health and Aged Care. So once your name does come to the top of the list, the process you go through is a very different one to the one you would do if you've got Commonwealth Home Support Program. What you then do is you contact organisations that say they're approved to provide a home care package and say, I would like to bring my funding to your organisation. And so when they do that, they bring funding to the organisation, the funding isn't capped then. Well, it's capped at the amount they bring, but it's not that the organisation will say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't take any more people who've got a home care package. They'll say, okay, you've got the funding, you bring that, and we then can provide the service.
Yes.
It's yes. So different to those two programs. And I understand that a lot of people don't know the difference, and why should they? There shouldn't be these incredible complications. But particularly people who are sitting waiting for a home care package, that is to get funding at the right level. And for many of them, you can get much higher funding than you can get through the Commonwealth Home Support Program. It is possible, if the organisation has some spare capacity in the Commonwealth Home Support Program, to provide some of the services that people need. But it's rarely adequate. People are approved for a home care package, they need the home care package.
Yeah, they need it now.
Because
in 11 months, when it's going to be assigned to them, their needs are going to be a lot higher.
They're going to be a lot higher. And that is absolutely the typical story.
Mm. We've been aware there have been CHSP or Commonwealth Home Support Program providers exiting the sector over the past couple of years, particularly in Victoria, where local councils ceased to deliver CHSP-funded services. It's a challenging part of the sector, as we've just discussed, Adrian. What are the challenges you encounter in delivering CHSP support to your current clients, as well as new referrals for new recipients under this type of funding?
Well, I think the biggest thing, we've really already spoken about it, which is there is demand in the community, absolutely legitimate demand for very basic things, help around the home, assistance with showering or medication support, and we don't have the funding to be able to match that demand. The irony with this, Coral, is we have employees skilled, capable, and ready to do the work, but we just don't have the funding that would allow them to do it. So that's actually the biggest challenge that we're facing with the program. And what strikes me about this is, in many ways, it's so curable. The government could say, we recognise the importance of being able to stay in their own homes, and we will put some more money into this program. Because for the government, it's a very cost-effective program. We can provide an hour of support to somebody under this program for much less cost than it costs to provide the same hour of support under the home care package program, because of the complexities that go with that program. So it would actually be very good value for the government to do that. Well, so I'm a little bit mystified about why they are so resistant to actually beefing this program up.
Well, I don't have the answers for that. And if you are still trying to find out, Adrian, I don't know, I think we're all in the same position, actually, and totally appreciate what you're saying. I think a scenario that we see as well, and I'm sure you do, are people who have been approved for their home care packages and the ACAT recognising that it's going to be nearly a year for those people until they're assigned that package, but will generate some CHSP referral codes or approvals in the meantime to sort of tide you over. I mean, how do you get tied over for 11 months? That doesn't happen. But from what we've just been discussing, they have to wait nearly a year for their package, but, you know, then they get this sort of glimmer of hope that they might get something under CHSP, and then they don't get that either. It's kind of like a double assault. Yeah.
It is, actually. That's a very good description.
A big misunderstanding in the community, as well as some parts of the sector, is that people currently receiving CHSP-funded services will be grandfathered into support at home in July 2027 when the CHSP program is proposed to cease. Can you explain what this means, Adrian?
Yes, look, and there are a couple of elements of this. First of all, you've mentioned the government's new program, Support at Home, which is entirely new, and it actually starts for some people in the middle of 2025, but that's not the people receiving CHSP or Commonwealth Home Support Program. They're saying the earliest that will begin is 2027. The word grandfathered, when they talk about grandfathering people, what they're usually talking about is they're saying that people who are grandfathered won't have to pay higher fees for the new program because Support at Home has much higher fees in it for some of the services. So, for example, for personal care, there'll be higher fees for many people. Certainly for help around the home, domestic help, much higher fees for some people. So when they say grandfather, they're usually talking and saying the people who are grandfathered won't have to pay those higher fees. But the people who are currently in the CHSP program, Commonwealth Home Support Program, the majority of them probably will not be grandfathered when the Support at Home program becomes, because the rules around this were to be classified as grandfathered, you had to already be assessed as eligible for a home care package, that other type of program, on the 12th of September 2024. Wow. So the vast majority of people, Commonwealth Home Support Program recipients, and there are about 800,000 people, the majority will not be grandfathered. So it does mean they'll be paying a lot more money. And for some people, this is potentially going to be challenging. I don't think it's well understood.
No.
And certainly, I'm hoping that many of the consumer organisations representing older people will take this issue up very firmly before that date in 2027 and say, this is not acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. So FlexiCare supports people with home care packages across South Brisbane. When a person calls your office to inquire about signing up with FlexiCare as their chosen provider, what kind of information is relayed at this point?
Really, it's whatever the person wants to know. I mean, why? Yeah. There are so many reasons people will ring. Sometimes they're just wanting to add a bit of detail. They've read our website and they just want to clarify something. But some people, they'll ring and they won't even know what they're asking. They won't know what a home care package is. They won't have understood the assessment process they've gone through. They won't understand why they've waited for 11 months. So it really depends on what they say when they ring. And we actually have quite a number of people in what we call our client communication team, and their job is to answer the questions that people have, the initial questions they have, and give them the information that they need.
Excellent. Yeah. And that's kind of the answer that I thought that's what you would say, Adrian. It's the number of people we see that are assigned their home care package and have no idea what that even means. And the questions we typically hear are, what can I get in my home care package? Like just no understanding of how it works. So that your team can address any of those questions, I think that's just wonderful. So let's say the person that's calling up thinks, wow, FlexiCare sounds all right to me. I'm really impressed with the information I've got so far. If they decide to choose FlexiCare as their preferred provider, what happens next?
Well, even before they do, Coral, if they're interested and indicating they might wish to, they don't have to say definitely will, we'll arrange a face-to-face meeting.
Yeah.
Wow. And because really, usually people and also family members will often want to know quite a lot of information.
Yes.
And when you start talking, with them. They'll think of other things that they really want to know. They might have heard things from friends. They might want to check things out with you. So we find that, look, the best way of doing those face-to-face, we don't sign people up over the phone. We want to know that we're right for them and they're right for us.
You can't do that over the phone. No, you can't. You can't. I think that's very reassuring for people, a face-to-face meeting, Adrian. So what is your care coordinators, or I think you said your coordinators are called home care partners. Home care partners.
Yes, and we chose that name a few years ago, actually, because we think it captures the relationship we're trying to establish with the clients we work with.
Yeah.
We work with people, with their partner, we're there to help them.
Exactly. Wonderful. So you've organized the face-to-face meeting with the potential client. The care partner has gone to the person's home. What happens in that process? What kind of exchange of information is happening?
Well, again, it depends on what the older person wants to know or their family wants to know. But let's say they've heard the kind of things that we do and they think, yes, that's what I'm interested in that. I guess at that point we need to work with them on refining the program of activities that or services they'll receive. And that really means exploring with them what's their situation, what's driving the need that they have, and what are they trying to achieve. Overwhelmingly, what people are trying to achieve is stay in their own home. And to do so, not just be there, but to have a good life there.
Exactly.
So it's really to explore with them, what does that mean for them? What is it that we need to do to help them experience that quality of life?
Fantastic. Very personalised.
Totally, actually, Coral. I mean, we don't have a template.
Hooray.
So we don't go in saying, oh, well, these are the things that we assume you're going to have. We'll know what the assessor has said when they've met the person 11 or 12 months ago. But we go in with a very open mind and saying, well, actually, we need to know now what your requirements are. And you've touched on it. Things can change so much between the time that they're initially assessed and when we're meeting them. So we really have to go in and say, what do you want? What do you want to do? What do you want to achieve?
And Adrian, is there health history taken into account when the care plan is being developed?
Absolutely. It's quite fundamental. I mean, this is overwhelmingly the case. The reason that people will be asking for any help at all in terms of either home care package or CHSP help will be because of something that's happened in their life in terms of their mobility or their strength or the coordination, or some health issue will have impacted on their quality of life. And I guess what we want to do is to understand what that is so that we can, as much as we possibly can, is help them overcome that and put the services in place that'll help deal with it. In some instances, the help that we'll provide will actually be something like nursing. So sometimes the starting place will be the person may have a chronic wound, for example, which has been causing them pain or difficulty with mobility. Maybe one of the first things we're doing is actually helping them work on that through providing quite intense nursing support.
Yeah.
Or they might be people who have difficulty with their mobility because of their feet. So we've got a great team of podiatrists that can work with people to help improve their mobility. So often it's the health issue that often triggers things for people, but also, of course, they want to live a life. And one of the things that people often want to sign up with us for is our community adventures program. So last year we visited 200 different places in Southeast Queensland with our community adventures. We've got buses and people go out and do all sorts of brilliant, exciting things.
That's right. Incredible.
So people really can be very engaged with the activities if they want to be. And they can have as little, they can have as little as they want if they're in a home care package, or as much as they want, and as much as the package will allow them to have. And look, we've got people who we are their only outing, and we know that, and their experience in the community. The other thing we try to do is don't do anything dull. We don't want to do same old, same old. We'll try and find somewhere quite exciting to go to that people won't have been to before. So we have a member of our team, and her whole job is to go and research fabulous places for people to go to in the community.
I love that. Fantastic.
She's just awesome at turning up great places to go that'll give people an enjoyable experience. The other thing she looks for is, for example, for a range of experiences that are for people with different mobility levels. Some people have their mobility is no challenge to them and fine. We will have some things that are reasonably challenging through to some things that, people are going to have a wheelie walker or something with them, and we need to make sure that they'll be safe.
That's
so
fantastic.
Safety is always a consideration in that, but so is the adventure. Push it as far as we can, basically.
Congratulations, Adrian. That just sounds amazing. What a difference that makes for your clients in your community. Mm. Like you just said, sometimes their provider is all that they've got. So that kind of service provision is absolutely meaningful and essential for those people to remain connected to their community, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. And certainly one of the things we try to do in some cases is go to things that people can enjoy and be part of. So one of the most successful things, for example, we've done has been we've engaged with a school that has a senior high school that has a group of people who are training in culinary skills. And so we go and let them go, our clients go there and let the students serve them lunch. And that, of course, is great for the students and a very appreciative group of people coming in, but also for the older people themselves, and they can chat to the students, and that's a very positive experience. So it's of all the things that we're doing, it's probably the thing that we've expanded most over the last few years. And really we've expanded it because that's what people need, and that's what they're telling us they need. Got a lot of people who are saying, I need a bit of help to get out into the community.
That's just wonderful. That just warms my heart. I just love that.
I'm delighted.
So the person has signed with FlexiCare, especially after they've heard about all these outings. They've signed with you as their chosen home care package provider. How soon does their funding become available for use?
Well, essentially it's straight away because they will have, before they contact us, they've usually got the letter from the Department of Health and Aged Care that says you're approved. You've now come to the top of the list. You can actually have the services that you need. So the answer is essentially immediately.
Excellent. Now, let's just say we have some listeners today who have gone, oh gosh, this sounds just amazing. I think I want to go with FlexiCare. Should a person decide to move providers from one provider to another, what does that look like? And is there any interruption to a person's service provision or their funding in that transition from one provider to the next?
There shouldn't be. I mean, there's no reason that it has to be. Occasionally there can be some glitchy things if the organisation that they're leaving doesn't want them to go, and that sometimes is the case. We've sometimes found a little bit of lack of cooperation from the other organisation in telling us how much money is left over in that person's unspent pool. But that's just some conversations we have to have. The individual shouldn't be troubled by that at all. And I mean, the aim would be for no interruption to services at all.
It can take up to 70 days for that amount of unspent funds to transfer to a new provider. Typically, that's our experience when people are changing providers. I would love to hear from you. Is it usually the 70 days, or can it happen sooner?
Well, it can happen as soon as it happens, really. I mean, so if the organisation that they're coming from, the legitimate reason why it sometimes takes a while is that if the person has been receiving services from third-party providers, so, for example, the people who might have been mowing their lawn or providing some external physiotherapy for them, there has to be time for those people to give their bill in to that previous organisation. And that's a legitimate reason. Yes. They shouldn't be dragging their heels in terms of giving their bill in, but sometimes they do.
Mm-hmm.
I think in practice, most of the time this goes more smoothly than we might think it could in the worst case scenario. But often we're waiting a while to find out what's the final transfer amount coming over. Yeah. But certainly the person can have ongoing services based on their funding day by day from the date they arrive. And if the organisation tells us that there's substantial amount left over in their unspent funds, I mean, we'll take that into account when we're planning their plan with them.
Okay, wonderful.
Community pharmacies keep Australia healthy. With 6,000 locations nationwide, they're open early, late and longer for convenient, accessible and safe care. Pharmacists provide home medicine reviews, dose administration aids and essential vaccinations. Thanks to additional training, many can now treat common conditions like ear infections, wounds and skin issues. They also support management of chronic conditions in partnership with your healthcare team. Ask your pharmacist how they can help you and your family stay well.
So how often are your clients, FlexiCare's clients, how often the home care package clients, how often is their care plan reviewed, Adrian?
Well, this would be by the home care partner that we're predominantly talking about here.
Yeah.
That would be as often as needed. And if we're dealing with somebody who has a situation where circumstances are volatile, where they might have come joined us at a time when there's a lot happening, a lot changing, either in terms of their personal circumstances, in their family circumstances, or in terms of their health, you might be reviewing with them, settling the plan in multiple times. It's not just necessarily a set and forget. I mean, it could be multiple times during a single week as you're refining what's happening, how did that go? Is that working? Yes, it's doing what it's not meant to be doing, or it's not. What changes do we need to make? But even with people who are very stable, and there are some people whose situation is stable and we set things up with them and things seem to work pretty well week in, week out, they can contact us at any point they want to, but we will initiate a review not less than once a year if we haven't formally reviewed them in that time. That's a formal sort of review. It takes stock how things are going. But the other reviews we do, and there are others, is where, for example, they've been working with a podiatrist who might build a review in terms of how are they responding to the treatment they've had in podiatry. That could be a review. Also, our nurses sometimes will do a review, which will be because we know they've started a new medication. Is that going well? We need to check how that's gone. We've settled this wound down. It seems like it's all stable now and not causing you any grief, but we'll check how it's going in a month. So those sorts of reviews. Same
Fantastic.
With our physiotherapists. So really, a lot of it is what's needed.
Yeah.
What's appropriate.
Absolutely. And responding to their changing needs as their needs are changing all throughout the year, not just at that 12-month review.
Well, it goes back to the first question you asked me today, which is about that process. And the answer is we recognise their needs could be changing very dramatically, very often.
Yes. Yep. So if the home care partner becomes aware or a family member reports that their loved one's needs have increased What's the process for requesting a support plan review for an upgrade of their home care package level?
So, I mean, let's assume we've had the conversation with the client and or their family, and everybody says, yes, we need more. I mean, we can refer them through the government system through for an independent assessment, and we will do that, and then we'll follow that up.
Yeah.
To make sure it's being actioned. But as I'm sure many of our listeners to this will know, sometimes the reviews take quite some time to arrange.
Yeah.
So if it's urgent, and it sometimes is, we will be in contact with the organisation that's meant to be doing the assessment and saying,
yeah,
what's happening.
Good on you. Be the squeaky wheel.
In fact, I have. That's kind of what we have to be in this system, unfortunately, yeah. Because unfortunately, because of these delays there are in getting assessed, the delays in getting packages allocated, sometimes it's important to make a bit of noise.
Absolutely. And I think at this point it's worth mentioning that, you know, as people's needs increase, and I have this conversation with some providers sometimes, and I'm like, my goodness, they need a higher level of package. But then the person I'm speaking to will say, well, they've got a whole lot of money in unspent funds. So I think it's really important that people are aware you will not get an upgraded level of your home care package if you've got a lot of unspent funds, because the ACAP will say, well, why do you need an upgraded level if you've got $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 of unspent funds? So when people are approved at their assessment for a level 3 package and then they're assigned that package, the expectation is that they're going to use that funding month by month because their needs reflect the amount of funding that they are being allocated. So,
yeah. But of course, the challenge is their needs can sometimes jump in front of that.
Yes.
So they might be assessed as level 3, have some money which they've saved up previously in unspent funds, but now their needs have actually jumped to a level 4. So you actually might end up spending the money at quite a fast rate.
A rapid rate.
I'm hoping that the assessment will be not take too long, and then hope that the allocation won't take too long.
Yeah.
There's a lot of juggling in that.
There is. And look, the ACATs that we speak to are really, you know, they're really understanding of this situation. And if you can explain, give the evidence, what the change is, why they might have had those unspent funds, but my goodness, something significant has happened and you're chewing through those funds rapidly now, that will actually satisfy them. So it's essential that all that evidence is conveyed to the assessing team so that they can make the right decision at that point.
Yes. Yeah. And look, the other thing that sometimes will happen in those circumstances too, well, there can be a little bit of topping up from the Commonwealth Home Support Program. But again, because those funds are so constrained, that's very difficult. And it was really not meant to be for that purpose. It's just that people's wait times are so long to actually get the upgrade after they've been assessed.
Yeah.
And actually, at the moment, Coral, there are not a lot of upgrades happening. Less than there would normally be, and we don't quite understand why. But again, these are things that are in the hands of the department.
Interesting. So with Support at Home, the new in-home aged care program beginning in July of this year, only a couple of months away now, are you fielding many questions from your current package recipients about these changes?
Not at this stage, Coral. What we're doing each month is we're providing information about the changes in each of the monthly newsletters that we provide to the clients. And each month we try and add a bit more.
Yeah.
And particularly as we learn more, because we don't even have the details yet, but certainly as we learn more, we try to share this with people. I'm hoping that's answering some of their questions. And some of them are fielding some questions to their home care partner. Yeah. But there's probably not as many as I think will be probably in the 4 weeks, 6 weeks leading up to where it all starts. And people go, oh, what's this all about?
Yeah.
And they'll probably get a letter from the government saying, you're swapping across to a home care package.
Yes.
I think that will trigger quite a lot of interest. And we're planning to put a lot more information out at that point for people so that it'll help answer their questions. But also our client communications team, as well as our home care partners, we're going to load them up with lots of answers to common questions and hopefully put people's minds at rest where we can. And if there are changes that are happening that people are going to be not so happy about, well, we'll need to let them know about that as well.
Yeah, explain that. Yeah. So the department is defining the service types a person can use their funding for. This is under supported home, July. There will also be fixed prices for such services too. So that's going to be delayed a little bit. Could you comment on what you think this will mean for participants under supported home?
Yes. Look, I think this is one of the things, the need for a particular service to be approved before you can get it will be one of the things that for some people who've been used to their home care package and the enormous flexibility there is in that home care package, I think they'll be frustrated with this, to be honest. Because I'll give you a scenario. Let's assume that somebody has been having some support around the home to do some domestic chores. They might be participating in the community adventures that we're running, and they might have some support with showering. But something happens, and they bump their and that's what they're getting. They're the services that they're receiving, but they bump their leg. And suddenly they find they have a skin tear and they need some nursing to try and support them. Now, under the home care package arrangements that exist today, that would be very easy for us to, for them to talk to us and simply say, I have something, I need some help here from your nurse. And we go, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll just adjust things a little bit, maybe a little bit less going out into the community this month, and we'll get the nurse to come and see you.
Yeah.
So that can be adjusted essentially over the phone, on the spot, and nursing can begin tomorrow. There's nothing to stop that happening. And it does. Yeah. I mean, this is a common thing that occurs.
It's a good thing.
It's a very good thing because that flexibility is fantastic, and it means that they're getting timely support for that wound. It never gets too bad, hopefully. And maybe within a few days, everything's under control and then go back to doing things the normal way. And maybe they don't even need the nursing. They may only need it for a very short period of time. But under the new supported home program that you've referred to this, is to get any service, it'll have to be specifically named. So nursing. So if the person didn't have nursing in their approval list before this date, we'll have to send that person for an independent assessment or review before they'll be able to get the nursing. Now, I wish I wasn't saying any of this because I think it's a really bad step. I think it's a step backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I really don't understand the logic of it, of holding people up from getting things they need. But this is something that we've certainly given feedback to the government on and to, as best we can, to say, are you aware that this is what it will mean? We hope that this is something the government might even have a fresh look at.
Absolutely.
And instead of saying that you've got to be reassessed, we'll just automatically give everybody all the standard services and they'll use only the ones they need. They won't start using nursing if they don't need it.
No, that's right.
But if they need it, there it is. It's available, ready to go.
One change that we've already seen, so the department has listened to some feedback and they have made a couple of amendments already in the context of the kind of support that people can receive or the amount of services and support that a person can receive, is the scrapping of the hourly caps for cleaning and gardening. Could you comment on what happened regarding this? In case people are unaware that there are no caps on these two types of services under support at home.
Absolutely, Coral, and that's exactly what happened. So the government had announced there would be caps on the amount of cleaning you could have in a year, and they were also capping the amount of gardening, and the amount of gardening, I think, was only going to be 18 hours a year. And for those of us who live in parts of Australia where things grow very quickly, 18 hours a year wasn't going to touch the sides. So, I mean, I think this is a very good sign that both the government and the department listened to what was in fact some very strong feedback from some older people who simply said, this is unrealistic.
Mm. Absolutely.
And they made that point extremely clearly. And if I understand, it was on a talkback radio show in Adelaide. Minister Mark Butler, who I think was caught partially unawares, not realising just what a difficult situation this would be. About 3 days later, the government announced there won't be any caps on these.
Wow.
And, I mean, again, I want to call this a good news story, because it shows the government was prepared to listen when they were presented with sensible arguments to say, this is not a good idea. No. Just unnecessary. It would have meant a lot of administrative work for providers, which to count the hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't really achieve anything very useful.
No.
And Pete? Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. I think those caps were really going to disadvantage people who were using essential services to stay well. I mean, cleaning, domestic assistance relates to health and well-being and hygiene, and yard maintenance and lawn mowing is a safety issue as well as a health issue. When you're looking where I live in the tropics, when the grass gets really long, there are snakes and rats. And so that's a real risk for those people under those previous caps. But as we've just said, those caps no longer exist sensibly.
Yes, sensibly. And look, I think in terms of what works best is where there's as much flexibility as possible for the older person to work with their home care partner or their care manager to work out what's right for me.
Absolutely.
What's going to work best, and to respond to all of those situations that will occur that you can't possibly foresee in advance, and situations like the regional differences.
Yes.
I bet the person who dreamt up the idea of having a cap on gardening wasn't thinking of snakes.
No, I guarantee it.
But yes, that's a real issue.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. And also, it's interesting gardening, because people often have their garden as something they're very proud of.
Oh, yes.
And it's part of their sense of well-being and sense of pride in the person that they are, and they've looked after their garden or at least their lawn, and they're proud of it.
Yes. Adrian, there's a lot of changes coming under support at home. Mm. But another one of the points that I wanted to just briefly chat with you is the reduction in the care management fee. So at the moment, providers can charge up to 20% of the level of the person's package funding for care management. And they can also charge up to 15% of the level of funding of the package level or package management. So potentially a grand total of 35% in admin type fees. Now, under support at home, that package management fee will no longer exist. And the care management fee is going to be coming down to 10%. So I know the sector itself has really been talking about this, as in how are we going to make this work? And I'm really keen to hear. And the other aspect of this is the combining this 10% fee across all your recipients or your clients. How is that going to work where you have people? And look, I don't know if I'm shooting for the stars here. It's, look, if I was a provider, I would be thinking, how are we going to make this work? But for people who have lower needs and need less intensive care management as opposed to someone on a higher classification, how is this going to work?
Mm-hmm. So, look, there are a few elements of that, aren't there? The reduction of, I'll talk care management first.
Yes.
So care management is what our home care partners do. And you asked me a whole lot of questions earlier about how we can support people and work with them. Mm. That's care management that we're doing when we're working with people. And our sense is that 10% is not enough.
No.
Our calculations are that it is definitely not enough because it's one of the things that older people will sometimes think, what's this care management thing about? What's all that about? But as soon as they get into the system, very large numbers of those people, not everybody, but very large numbers of people say, oh, yes, I want that help because I don't know everything there is about the health system. I don't know everything about aged care. I don't know everything about the community resources that are available to me. And I can work with somebody who has that expert knowledge and expertise in helping me get the greatest value out of my funding that's been made available by the government. So it's one of the things that certainly is worrying me about support at home. We're going to be trying very, very hard to hang on to as much of that care management capacity we can. That's the home care partnering I talked about before. So we will try very hard. One of the other things, though, is that the amount of support you need from a home care partner isn't necessarily tied to your package level, using the current package levels as a thing to discuss. You can have people who are on quite high package levels whose situation is not volatile. It's intense support needed, but you can put it in place and it doesn't change very much. Mm-hmm. Those people won't need a lot of care management. Whereas there are people who are on a lower funding level who, because their situation is very volatile, or they may not have the level of funding they really need. Yes. We talked about that before, and you might be juggling trying to get some Commonwealth Home Support program money to support them in things, and you're trying to make things work. They might end up needing quite high levels of support. There might be a lot of liaison with assessment organizations about when's the assessment going to be done. It doesn't go neatly with the levels, and it's not predictable. So the person who today needs very, very little care management might need a whole lot tomorrow, a lot of support from their home care partner, and it's usually because something's changed for them. And look, it can be so many different things, can't it? And at one end, you can have people who have a stroke, for example.
Yes.
And who were, up to yesterday, were dealing very autonomously with their life. They might have needed a bit of help here and there. Whereas after the stroke, they might need, particularly during the intense period of recovering from the stroke, needing a lot more help and support. Yeah. So look, it's one of the things that I think is disappointing about support at home. And I'm hoping, again, it's one of the things the government will revisit in the light of experience. And I hope we'll be working exceptionally hard not to allow anybody to be disadvantaged because they need more care management than the 10% allows.
That's fantastic. So under support at home, July this year, there's a big change from people are allocated their funding month by month now. Under support at home, it's moving to a quarterly budget. Mm. At the moment, people who aren't spending their monthly subsidy each month can roll over an unlimited amount of those unspent funds every month, allowing them to accumulate funding. Sometimes they do this intentionally to save up for a large purchase, or sometimes it just happens because they aren't using their funding for whatever reason. The maximum amount of funding a person can roll over under support at home will be capped. Can you explain this for our listeners, please, Adrian?
Yes. So in terms of the way that will operate, as far as I understand, is that new funding that the person receives once they're on support at home from the 1st of July onwards this year, each quarter they will only be allowed to carry forward into the next quarter a maximum of 10% of the funding that they got during the month, or $1,000, whichever is the greater number, of unspent funds. So you painted the scenario where the person is not spending all of their allocation. In the future, you won't be able to continue to build that up indefinitely. And I really do understand the logic of this from the government's point of view, because at the moment, there are billions of dollars of unspent funds that people have put aside for the rainy day or for whatever reason that's happened, which really those funds ought to be directed to other older people who need support. We talked about this earlier in the conversation. There are people out there who go month by month not being able to get what they need, or even year by year not being able to get what they need. Those funds really should be reallocated and allowed to be used. So in terms of the concept, is not such a bad one. I think it would be better if they let us carry over, say, 25% rather than 10%. So there's a little bit more wriggle room there between quarters. But the other thing is, people will no longer need to save up for the purchase of, for example, a bed or a wheelchair or something. That actually is one of the benefits of support at home. There'll be a separate funding stream that is able to be accessed. As long as people can get assessed as being eligible for it, they will be able to get those items at an earlier stage. Yes. But that requires a separate assessment. Again, we've talked about, you've got to wait for an assessment. How long does that take? And so for some people, this will be an advantageous change. For other people who'd already saved up the money and could go ahead and make the purchase, it would be a disadvantageous change. So but in terms of the community and older people generally, I think this is a net positive, because some people, quite honestly, had saved up extraordinary amounts of money.
Oh, yes.
And I can quote from my organization's point of view, we've had somebody with $160,000. And why had that happened? Well, they were a long-term recipient of a package, and they'd been over-assessed. They'd been assessed at too high a level when the assessment was done. They just got it wrong. And this individual wanted to give the money back, and the government said, you can't. So they had, it was $160,000, I think they got up to.
Wow.
And I mean, that's just crazy stuff. And yeah, Nobody needs that. So the aim, the department and the government's aim here is a good one. I'd like them to give us back a little bit more flexibility, and their overall aim would still be achieved. People would not be saving up indefinitely for things, for that rainy day that may never come. Or as other people saying, it's already raining.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, they're trying to use the money now. It's available to you. Go ahead and use it. And we always let our clients know, this is the money that's been given to you because the government and its assessment processes think you're entitled to it and you
that's
need
right.
it.
Right.
So yeah. Use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You made a valid point there. You can't give it back, nor can you bequeath it when you die. And we see that as well, where people think that amount of unspent funds from their package, they can actually leave that to their family in their will. It doesn't work like that.
It definitely doesn't. No.
No.
And nor will it in the future, and nor should it.
No.
These are funds that are actually being made available to help that person.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and live their best life. So let's hope they can.
Yeah, let's help them spend their funding. Adrian, we've covered a lot of ground today, and it's reassuring to hear how FlexiCare is responding to supporting your clients with their home care packages, you know, currently and certainly in the next couple of months and beyond as we transition into support at home. We're only 2 months away from this program being introduced, and there are still so many questions that we want the department to answer. In general terms, how is FlexiCare adapting to the changes that are bearing down on you and all of us in the sector right now?
Yes, well, that's such a good question. But look, over time, more and more
detail. How are your stress levels?
Well, we keep laughing, and that's probably the most useful thing you can do. Look, we've been getting a clearer and clearer picture over time as the department and government releases more and more information about the way support at home is going to work. And we've been spending a fair bit of time reading the documents, attending the webinars, going to the industry meetings, sharing information with people, just trying to understand what the environment's going to really be like when 1st of July this year comes. And look, at the way we've done it is we've set up a team of people who we've asked them, as well as doing their normal job, because everybody's got to keep doing the normal job, is to keep an eye on all these issues, learn as much as you can, and think through the implications of that, or what that will mean for our clients and what that will mean for us internally in terms of the way we need to be organised and what we need to do. And that workload of preparing is growing and growing, and it probably will continue to. And we know that when July 1 comes this year, it won't all be over. In fact, probably in many cases, it's where the work will begin, because you'll see in practice how things really play out. So we'll keep that team of people in place, ready to respond to whatever comes up. And we know there will be surprises. Yeah. I think the other thing that we're trying very hard to do is to focus on why we exist as an organisation. And really, we're only here because we want to support older people to live well in their own homes, communities. That's not changing. There might be an awful lot that's changing, but that's not changing, that reason to be. And keeping that on the front of our minds, that really does help, because then you can think, okay, now how can what we do, there might be some rule changes, there might be some things that are going to be a bit different, but how can we now in this new environment continue to try and do the best we can to support people to live their best lives.
Excellent. So it's a time of significant change within the aged care sector, and the questions people are asking across social media and when they call us reveal the confusion and unease with how people are responding to this change. Listeners, Adrian is coming back next week to continue chatting with me, and this time we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive into supported homes. So you will be in for a treat at our next episode when Adrian joins me again. Adrian, thank you for joining me today. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
And Coral, also with you, thank you for the opportunity. And I'm so pleased that we've had an opportunity to speak with your listeners.
Thank you, Adrian. Until next week, everybody, take care.